also meant that he was responsible for obtaining the foodstuffs and drinkables that supplied the kitchen, and other things as well. Very quickly, Devlin became the station's unofficial procurer. He was able to acquire things, find things, bring people together in a manner that was little short of Machiavellian. When a staff scientist needed a new set of sensors in too much of a hurry to go through the red tape of the station's regular procurement department, Red got the sensors for him and let him fill out the paperwork later. When someone needed some recreational drugs for a party she was throwing, it was the Red Devil that she turned to. When a lonely administrator needed diversion, Devlin smuggled in virtual reality sex simulations. He brewed rocket juice in a still that was tucked away among the scoop ship operator's repair facilities. He hacked into the station's personnel files to speed transfers and promotions. He called himself a facilitator. Many times over the years he had been at Station Gold, he'd heard people say admiringly that the station couldn't operate without him. Devlin knew he was the lubricating oil that made the machinery run smoothly. Or so he thought of himself. Now and then he considered leaving Gold and returning to Australia. He had enough money tucked away to retire in comfort. But his memories of Earth were not all that pleasant. Orphaned at the age of 6, a ward of the state, compulsory schooling, and then training for the restaurant business that was so poor he went bankrupt right off. No, he told himself. Here at Gold he was known and respected, even admired by many of the brainiest people around. It was a small, almost claustrophobic world, but Red regarded himself as a pretty big fish in this little pond, and that's the way he liked it. But as he sat up in his narrow bed, he mulled over this latest twist in the station's sometimes Byzantine politics. Westfall wants a sample of nanomachines. Dangerous stuff, that. But she's powerful enough to chuck me in jail, or at least get me thrown off Gold. What then? Where would I go, even if she doesn't railroad me into the cooler? His room was small, little more than a nook near the kitchen. Devlin had never been one for creature comforts. His tastes for physical well-being were little short of Spartan. What he enjoyed most was the smiling admiration of the people around him, scientists, engineers, administrators, men and women of good families and high education. They came to him for help. They needed the old Red Devil to solve their problems for them. Now I'm the one who needs help, he thought as he stared sleeplessly at the blank display screen on the bulkhead at the end of his bunk. Westfall can ruin my life if I don't do what she wants. But what she wants might be dangerous, terribly dangerous. Should I tell Archer about it? Devlin shook his head. Nah, he's too straight arrow. He always shied away from me when he was a punk kid just arrived here. Devlin remembered the first time he had offered to get some VR sex sims for the young Grant Archer. The kid had looked like he'd just been offered a deal to sell his soul. Archer was a religious believer back then, still is as far as Devlin knew, married to the same woman all these years, no hint of him straying. So what if I tell Archer about it, that it set up a real head-to-head battle between him and Westfall? She'd wipe the floor with him. Grant could never fight the way she would. She'd have him tossed off Gold before he knew what hit him. No, Devlin told himself, I can't bring Archer into this. I've got to find a way to satisfy Westfall without running the danger of setting nanomachine gobblers loose all over the place. But how? How can I do that? He decided the answer was more than he could hope to achieve at the moment. But as he wriggled down into his bunk and closed his eyes for sleep, he realized he was wrong. He knew the answer. It came from a story he'd been told at the orphanage all those years ago. A story by somebody with three names. Hans Christian Andersen.
Observation Deck. With some misgivings, Deirdre made her way along the main passageway toward the observation deck, where Max Jaeger was waiting for her. She hadn't seen Jaeger for several days, not even in the galley at dinner time. The station's phone system tracked him down almost instantaneously in the mission control center. From her own compartment's wall screen, Deirdre could see that Max looked haggard, unshaven, his thick mane disheveled, his coveralls wrinkled and baggy. Over his shoulder, she could see a bright-looking golden-haired woman with violet eyes sitting at the main console.
"Dee?"
Jaeger said, easing into a grin as soon as he recognized who had called her.
"What can I do for you, gorgeous?"
Deirdre suppressed an annoyed frown. "Max, I need to talk to you."
"Sure."
His grin became leering.
"Your place or mine?"
"Be serious."
"What's the trouble, Dee?"
"I need your advice. It's personal. Can we meet somewhere in private? Someplace where we won't be disturbed?" His face totally serious now, Jaeger said.
"Okay, sure."
He thought a moment, then suggested,
"How about the observation deck?"
Deirdre nodded. "All right.
I can be there in 10 minutes.
"The observation deck," she said. 10 minutes. Now, though, as she neared the doors, Deirdre recalled that the observation deck was sometimes used as a lover's tryst. "Max," she railed silently, "did I give him the impression that I'm interested in him sexually?" "No," she told herself, "but what I said and what he heard could be two entirely different things." So she felt distinctly nervous as she slid back the door to the observation deck and stepped inside. The door slid shut automatically, and the lights inside dimmed. It was like standing out in space. Deirdre could see myriads of stars spread across the infinite black, the beauty of the universe stretching before her eyes. But she had no time for the glory of the heavens. "Max?" she called. "Max, are you here?" Silence. Then the door slid open again, spilling light from the passageway into the compartment. Max Jaeger's burly form was silhouetted briefly as he stepped through, and the door shut once more, automatically dimming the lights.
"Sorry I'm late," he said, his tone apologetic. "I had to get loose from Linda. She wanted to come here with me."
Deirdre assumed Linda was the woman she had glimpsed in the phone screen. "It's all right," she said. "I just got here myself."
"So, here we are, beautiful in this romantic spot. Just you and me and a few zillion stars."
Deirdre said, "Behave yourself, Max."
"Do I have to?" he said, in an imitation of a little boy's whine.
"Max, I need your advice."
"About what?"
Deirdre bit her lip, trying to frame her words. Max loomed before her in the shadows, a big shaggy presence. "How dangerous will the mission be?" she asked. In the dim light, it was difficult to see his face, but his voice sounded surprised.
"Dangerous? Like any flight mission, Dee. There's always the element of risk."
"But going down into the ocean, living in that liquid, breathing it."
"You're not going, are you?"
"Andy wants me to. He needs me to." For a couple of heartbeats, Jaeger said nothing. Then,
"You're scared, huh?"
"Terrified," she admitted.
"Then don't go."
"But Andy, he wants to make contact with the Leviathans, and he thinks I can be a big help to him."
"Then go."
"You're not helping me." Jaeger stepped closer to her, so close she could smell the acrid tang of his unwashed coveralls.
"Dee, honey, what do you want from me? I can't make up your mind for you."
"I need to know if your ship is safe," she replied. "I need to know if we can get through the mission without harm." Jaeger fell silent again.